Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TICFM and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you this Sunday morning, and we are pleased to be joined by Dr. Theodore Andriotis, director of the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station in New Haven. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be back again.
The station is launching a new tick surveillance program this year. Tell us how this will work.
Yeah, we're really excited. We received some funding from the Centers for Disease Control to establish the first ever active tick surveillance program, where we will be monitoring tick populations throughout the entire state of Connecticut and all eight counties, beginning right now until the end of October. The purpose of this program is for us to determine the distribution of a variety of different ticks in the state and to get a better handle on the variety of pathogens that these ticks are transmitting that all cause human disease.
What sort of diseases will you be looking for?
Well, principally, number one, we'll be looking for Lyme disease because that's the most important. But we also have a newly emerging pathogen called Powassan virus that we don't know much about, and there's no treatment for this particular virus, but we don't know currently how prevalent it is in the state and how widely distributed. We'll also be screening ticks for Babesia, which is on the rise, especially in eastern Connecticut. It's a malaria-like parasite, and also another bacterial pathogen called Anaplasma.
We know a fair amount about Lyme disease living in Connecticut, but these other pathogens, really, there are a lot of questions still about them, aren't there?
Yeah, and they all seem to be on the increase. In our passive tick surveillance program, where we test ticks for a variety of pathogens that are brought in by citizens because they're feeding on them, we find that over 50% of the ticks that are submitted to us in our program are infected with one of three different agents. And so we want to find out how widespread this is throughout the state, especially in Tallinn and Windham counties where we don't get many submissions from. So this will give us some more important information so we can really get a better handle on what the risk is to the public in these other areas of the state.
So ticks will be collected at 40 sites around Connecticut. How will this work?
We're going out right now. The way the ticks are collected is we use a white flannel sheet, and we drag the sheet over a certain length of the forest or the woodland area, and as that's dragged, you pick up ticks. And then we sit down, we pull the ticks off of the sheet, we put them in vials, we identify them back in the laboratory, and then they will be screened for a variety of different pathogens to see if they're infected.
This is thanks to CDC funding that you have for 1 year,
correct? For 1 year, yeah. The CDC is increasingly interested in supporting tick surveillance and research, and this is part of that program. It's funding that we've only received for 1 year. However, we have submitted another grant application through our Department of Public Health, which are our partners in this, for additional funding for the next 5 years. And if we're fortunate enough to receive that, we'll continue this program in years to come.
How much funding roughly are we talking about?
We asked for about $160,000 per year, as we think that would be adequate to completely support this program and do all of the research that we would like to do with it.
So certainly in the grand scheme of things, not a huge amount of money, and it sounds as if it might yield some results that could be useful down the road.
Yes, absolutely, because anytime you conduct a program like this, you're usually going to find something new. The other thing that we're really interested in is we've got two new ticks that seem to be moving into the area. We have the Asian longhorn tick called Haemaphysalis longicornis. This is a tick that originated from Asia, and it was first detected in New Jersey feeding on sheep. It's since been detected in seven different states, including Connecticut, and we don't know how widespread it is. We have collected one of these ticks feeding on a human that was submitted to our laboratory for testing. So we're going to get a better understanding of how widely distributed this tick is and whether or not it's carrying any pathogens. We're also interested in this amblyomma tick, which is the Lone Star tick. This is a voracious feeder, It's a tick that's called a hunter because it'll actually chase you and come after you. It doesn't just lie in stealth. We have an isolated population that we're aware of that's in Norwalk on Manresa Island, but we don't know how widely distributed it is in the state. And it is an important vector of a lot of different pathogens that cause human disease and is the most important tick, really, in the southeastern regions of the United States. And with our changing climate and warmer summers, it does seem to be encroaching here in Connecticut.
So it will chase you? How does that work?
This is a tick that is attracted to CO2, which we emit. And so when it detects the presence of a suitable animal, it will start coming after you. It's not like the black-legged or deer tick, nor the American dog tick, which really lies as a stealth feeder up on the blades of grass and on the vegetation. And then when you come by, it will attach to you. The Amblyomma Lone Star tick will actually come after you.
How will this tick surveillance program dovetail with your testing program, which you've been running for a number of years, where you get a lot of the samples through health departments?
It will really complement this program because we don't know how effective the passive tick surveillance program is in really getting a true estimate on the prevalence of these pathogens. And right now, we're only screening for three different ones. With our active tick surveillance program, we'll be screening for up to seven different pathogens that we know these ticks could potentially carry. So we will get much more information on these other emerging pathogens in the state.
Looking back last year, how bad a tick season was it, and what can we expect this year?
Well, right now, we seem to be ahead of the curve. And what I mean by that is that in our tick testing lab right now, we are getting 40 to 50 submissions a day. And we usually don't see those types of numbers until we get into May. So the season looks like it's gotten off to a pretty early start. And with warmer weather in the coming weeks, this will only increase. So I just want to put a word of caution out to folks that if you're out, you know, gardening, going on hikes in any vegetated area where you may encounter ticks, please check yourself very closely after you've come out of these areas because the ticks are active and they're actively feeding right now.
Is there a time of year where you can safely assume that ticks are not active?
It really just the middle of the winter, you know, especially if you have snow covering or freezing temperatures. We have seen in some years when we have a mild February, for example, that people will actually pick up ticks because they're there overwintering. And if you have warm enough days, they will go ahead and attach and feed if they encounter you. So really the only safe time is the middle of the winter. But if we have some warm days, you could also pick them up at that time as well.
Tell us a little about Connecticut's history with Lyme. It's named after a town in our state. That's where it was first found, right?
Unfortunately, we have the dubious distinction, I think, of being called the Lyme disease capital of the world because it was discovered here in Lyme, Connecticut. Historically, you know, we've had several thousand cases that occur every year. Last year, for example, actually in 2017, the Connecticut Department of Public Health reported 2,000 confirmed cases, and that's probably just a small proportion of the people that are actually contracting the disease because not all cases may be reported. So this is an ongoing issue. It's there every year. Very, very high prevalence in our tick testing program. Almost 40% of the ticks that are brought in are positive for the bacterium that causes Lyme disease. Now, if you can remove that tick within 48 to 72 hours, the likelihood of becoming infected, if that tick is in fact infected, is reduced. So if you can find it and remove it quickly, even if it's positive, the likelihood of you becoming sick is greatly reduced.
You talked about the tick that chases you. Another thing that really got my attention was Powassan and how quickly that can transfer from tick to human.
Yeah, Powassan virus is a potentially really serious infection. This is a virus that there's no treatment for. And unlike Lyme disease or some of the other bacterial pathogens, it can be transmitted by these ticks in a matter of 15 to 20 minutes. So they feed and rapidly inject that virus into your bloodstream. As I indicated, there's no treatment. This virus can cause serious neurological problems, including encephalitis. And there have been a number of fatalities that have been associated with this particular virus. We've had at least 2 confirmed human cases in the state, but the number of cases that are being reported throughout the Northeast, including New York, especially in the Hudson River Valley, and even in portions of Maine and Massachusetts, are on the rise. So this is an emerging pathogen that we really need to get a better handle on.
As you noted, it's important to check yourself for ticks if you spend any time out of doors in the warmer weather. What else can you do to protect yourself? Are there repellents you can use?
The tick check is probably the most important thing, but if you're going out, you want to use a commercially available repellent. The best repellents to be used really contain a pesticide called permethrin, but that product cannot be applied to skin. It can only be applied to clothing, but that will actually kill the ticks and is probably the most effective. So if you really want to protect yourself, you wear long pants, light-colored clothing, white or light beige, tuck in your pants into your socks, and spray your pant legs up to your waist and even above that with this permethrin. That will give you the best protection. If you don't feel comfortable doing that and you're wearing shorts, especially in the summertime, then use a product that contains DEET, and that will protect you as well. But once again, once you come out of the area, you really want to do a tick check.
What are the most susceptible areas? Are those high grasslands, areas like that?
Yes, anywhere you have low-lying brush, grasslands, especially in that interface between the wooded area and, say, your lawn. That's a high-risk area. And in fact, when we talk with people, you know, many people pick up these ticks right in their backyard, and it's that transition zone between the woodland area and your nice manicured lawn. As you move into that area there where the grasses are taller, you've got some low-lying bushes, that's where the ticks are. We have a lot of leaf litter as well.
You're listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to Dr. Theodore Andriotis, director of the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station in New Haven. We've talked a lot about ticks, but you are also ramping up for the mosquito trapping and testing program this year after really the worst year on record ever for West Nile in Connecticut.
Yeah, last year, unfortunately, we had a very bad year for West Nile virus. In fact, it was the worst year that we've ever seen in our area. And it wasn't just here in Connecticut. It was throughout the entire northeastern United States. Unfortunately, we had 23 confirmed human cases of West Nile virus. And unfortunately, we had one fatality, an elderly individual that was over the age of 80. We detected mosquitoes very early in the season carrying the virus, as early as June 18th. And usually we don't see anything until July. Then with the warm weather, we saw a really steady increase throughout the months of July and August. So we knew this virus was really building. Before we were finished with the season, we had detected virus in mosquitoes in 65 different locations in 53 communities in the state of Connecticut. And that's the widest distribution we have ever seen. So unfortunately, it was a real banner year. And we attributed that to the conditions that we have. And historically, what we typically see, because people always ask us, what kind of a season is it going to be? Usually, if you have a mild winter, a wet spring, and then a really hot, dry summer, that seems to amplify and accelerate the West Nile virus transmission cycle. So we will have to see. It hasn't been terribly wet this spring, but we did have a mild winter. So we'll see. We get underway beginning the first week in June, and we will trap mosquitoes at 92 locations throughout the entire state of Connecticut until the end of October. And when we detect mosquitoes that are infected with the virus, we report that immediately to our Department of Public Health, which will notify the local communities, and then alerts will be put out. And I just want to reemphasize that when we find infected mosquitoes in a community, it's the real deal. We can usually detect it in mosquitoes in a certain location in a certain time, you know, a couple of weeks before we get to a level where we're getting any human involvement. So when we do find it and report it in your community, it's important to take some precautions.
You're looking not only for West Nile, but for Tripoli as well?
That's right. Tripoli, Eastern Equine Encephalitis, is a virus that's been with us forever. And this occurs in more rural areas of the state, whereas West Nile virus is really focused in lower Fairfield and New Haven counties and in and around the greater Hartford area, especially in that I-95 corridor, you know, below the Merritt Parkway. Eastern equine encephalitis, by contrast, occurs over in the eastern portion of the state, especially in the Stonington, Ledyard, Voluntown area. And the reason for that is this virus is transmitted by a mosquito that develops almost exclusively in these permanent red maple, white cedar swamp habitats. So it has a very different type of ecology versus the urban mosquitoes that carry West Nile virus. And that's where we see most of the activity. That is a virus that we find is totally unpredictable. We never know what we're going to see with that virus. Historically there, if we have a really wet summer, that seems to create conditions where the mosquito that carries it builds up to high enough populations. But the virus typically has to get reintroduced. We know that the virus can potentially overwinter here, but more often we see that it probably gets introduced with migrating birds that come from Florida.
And in terms of West Nile and Tripoli, both can be serious. Tripoli is more rare in humans, yeah, and that is also more serious one in humans.
Yes, unfortunately, Tripoli is the most pathogenic of any of the mosquito-borne viruses, and the case fatality rate approaches about 30%, and it's especially serious in young children. They're the most susceptible group, and if you are fortunate enough to survive an infection, in many cases you will develop severe neurological problems that will be with you for the rest of your life. Unfortunately, several years ago, we did have a fatality from Tripoli over in the Voluntown area. We had found high numbers, very, very high numbers of mosquitoes carrying the virus. We worked with the Department of Environmental Protection to close some of the state parks in that area. But unfortunately, we did have one individual late in the season that did contract the virus and died. So this is a potentially very, very serious viral infection. But we do monitor for this, and we usually won't see any activity until we get into late August or early September. If we find it in July, then that's a real cause for concern.
You can also take steps to help guard against mosquito-borne viruses as well, can't you, in terms of like removing water from around your house?
Sure, especially in urban areas, because in these artificial containers and gutters and sewers and drains, these are where the Culex mosquitoes that carry this virus typically will develop in. So it's always a good measure to get rid of any containers that are holding water. Don't let your bird baths become stagnant. You know, just empty them once a week. If you have pools, swimming pools, make sure they're chlorinated. Mosquitoes will not develop in pools that have chlorine. It's only if they get stagnant, especially if you get a lot of algae buildup, that will create a lot of good habitat for these mosquitoes. And a lot of these mosquitoes, too, are coming from storm drains and catch basins, but that's usually up to the local community to try to treat.
In terms of a repellent for mosquitoes, is there one that's the best out there?
The products that seem to work the best are any that contain DEET or picaridin. Those two are very, very effective. Some of the others, you know, oil of eucalyptus and that sort of thing may give you some mild protection, but they're not particularly effective. So I generally go with the DEET or the picaridin, and that can be applied directly to the skin. Also, there's no reason to use anything above 30% concentration. And the only difference between the lower concentration, like 7 or 14, is that the higher the concentration, the longer it will last.
In terms of the types of mosquitoes we see in Connecticut, has that remained relatively stable over the years?
Well, we're seeing some incursion by some invasive species. The most important is the Asian tiger mosquito, Aedes albopictus. This is a mosquito of concern because, number one, it's a day biter. Number two, it transmits a number of viruses, including yellow fever, dengue, Zika, chikungunya virus. We have detected this mosquito. We found it as early as 2006. And over the past 3 to 4 years now, we've seen its incursion and formal establishment in southwestern Connecticut, especially in the coastal community. So it's here. The numbers aren't terribly high, but we are seeing that with each year, and especially with warmer temperatures in the summer, further encroachment. And it's likely that this mosquito will make become a permanent resident here in Connecticut, which is of some concern.
The experiment station has a lot of experience dealing with mosquitoes and tracking them and monitoring them. As you launch the new surveillance program for ticks, are there things that you have already learned with the mosquitoes that you can improve on the tick program?
Well, what we know with mosquitoes is the more you trap, the more you find. And our surveillance program for mosquitoes works really, really well. There are no surprises for us. We can track these infectious agents, these viruses in mosquitoes early enough and in the right locations before they reach a level where you have a high risk for human exposure. We're hoping that we can achieve sort of the same thing with our tick surveillance program so that we can find some of these newly emerging pathogens, get a better handle on what risks they pose to the public, and give us a better way of trying to develop better control procedures, because that's really what we really want to do. And the ultimate is we want to control tick populations. We want to reduce the incidence of human disease with all these tick-borne pathogens.
As you launch the tick surveillance program, what's the timeline for getting it off the ground?
Well, we're beginning right now. All of the sites have been selected, and we're trapping ticks right now as we speak.
Connecticut has the oldest agricultural experiment station in the country. As you launch this new tick program and you've been running the mosquito program for a number of years, do other states look to you for advice as they see these pathogens emerge in their states?
Well, we interact quite closely with a lot of other agencies, especially that are involved in any type of vector surveillance and control. We are fortunate enough to be part of the Northeast Regional Center of Excellence in Vector-Borne Diseases. We have one of five institutions in the country to have received funding from the CDC for this particular program. We partner with Cornell University, Columbia University, and the New York and Connecticut Departments of Public Health. This program that we're involved with is a five-year program that we receive funding from to train the next generation of vector biologists to learn about emerging mosquito and tick-borne pathogens and to develop better methods to control these infectious diseases. And this program, we are now entering the third year. There are five centers in the country. We're fortunate to be part of the Northeast Center. There is one in Florida, there is another one in Texas, one in California, and then another out in the upper Midwest that's centered through the University of Wisconsin.
Briefly tell us what else the Ag Experiment Station does, because there's a lot of ticks and mosquitoes, but that's not all.
Well, our original foundation was really to improve Connecticut agriculture. And actually, our first charge was to evaluate fertilizers. The experiment station was established back in 1875. It's the oldest in the nation. And at that time, there were a number of unscrupulous folks who were producing fertilizers that didn't contain what they said they did. And that was a period of time when it was recognized that if you use fertilizers, you could really increase crop production. And you have to remember, back then, we were more of an agrarian, society. When I look at old fishes of the experiment station, we're located in New Haven, we were surrounded by farms. Now we're surrounded by huge houses. And so that was our original charge. But today, we focus really in four areas. We focus on agriculture, which was our foundation, food safety, the environment, including research on forestry, and then, of course, public health, which we focus on vector-borne diseases. And currently, we have about 100 permanent employees at the stage. We have 35 to 40 PhD scientists in the various areas. We focus all of our scientists on their own individual research projects, really. And our motto is really putting science to work for society. So we work on practical problems, but we do a lot of work in molecular biology. But we've really focused for the primary on issues of concern to Connecticut and to the Northeast region, as we feel that that's really what we should be focusing on as the state agricultural experiment station.
He is Dr. Theodore Andriotis, director of the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.